welcome to episode 14 of Pennsylvania Veterans Forward. Today we sit down with District 27 Commander Ken King of the Pennsylvania Veterans of Foreign Wars, who shares his thoughts on the state of the VFW in Pennsylvania. Ken is also a candidate for the high office of State Junior Vice Commander and gives us a window into his views and approach to leadership and his vision for leading Pennsylvania should he be elected state commander. Here's that interview.
Greetings, veterans and friends. John Ott here, Pennsylvania Veterans Forward. I'm here with a very honored guest, Mr. Kenneth King, Ken King of the District 27 Commander of the Veterans of Foreign Wars Department of Pennsylvania. Welcome to the show, Ken.
Hi, John. Glad to be here. Happy to be here. Really appreciate you inviting me onto the show today. Thank you.
It's an honor to have you, sir. And I've been looking forward to this interview for quite some time. So as custom on the show, we have the guest explain a little bit about themselves, where they're from, their military background and experience, and how you qualified for the Veterans of Foreign Wars.
Sure. All right. Well, I appreciate it. So again, it's an honor to be here. Really appreciate the opportunity to speak to you and to speak to your audience. So, as mentioned, my name is Ken King. I'm an Army vet of about 30 years. In fact, I just dropped my final retirement paperwork. My eligibility for the VFW is I've done a couple of tours in Iraq in 03 and 08. I did a tour in Afghanistan, a tour in Kosovo, and I'm also proud of the fact that I'm the daddy of a vet. My daughter actually went to Afghanistan in 2016 with the 82nd.
So you're telling me that you had that same crappy travel agent I did?
You know, and the worst part is the contractors never leave Afghanistan. The contractors that I made friends with in 2012 were still there when she was there in 16. And I knew they were calling me and letting me know what she was doing before she knew what she was doing.
I'll tell you, the memories you look upon fondly, you know, as you look back, right? As I look back, I don't miss the circus, but I miss the clowns.
Yes. Great people. I was blessed. Through all my deployments, through all my experiences, had wonderful, great people. And in fact, I still stay in contact with a lot of them now. In fact, a lot of them with my personal business, my civilian business, Kingfisher, we employ disabled vets. And a lot of my old troops, a lot of my old sailors and soldiers actually are still working for me now. So
that's
again,
nice.
Great working with folks, learning from them. I learned a long time. Everybody's smarter than me about something.
Right. Yeah. I always use the same approach as well. Let me do a lot more listening because there's a lot more smart folks than me in there. So, well, it is great to have you, sir. Great to have you here and be part of the show. I know that you and I serve as district commanders together in the Department of Pennsylvania. You're out there in, Pittsburgh or near the Pittsburgh area. I'm on the east side of the state. Tell us a little bit about now. You've been district commander 2 years, right? This is your second year?
Yes, sir. Just right in the middle of our second year over at District 27. We're just south of Pittsburgh. We're down in Westmoreland County. Great folks here. I've got about 19 posts that are throughout the county. Great, fantastic group. Just had our recent district meeting this past Sunday. And had almost 50 people at the district meeting. One of the things I've been doing during the course of this year as a district commander is I've been visiting other districts to see how other district commanders, everybody's smarter than me about something, to see what they've been doing well and to see what successes they've had so I can bring it back to our group. My first year as a district commander, again, when I was a battalion commander, when I was a brigade commander, when I was a company commander, I learned a long, long time ago, the first thing you want to do is visit the troops. You want to know what motivates the guys, what motivates the team, and how can I help contribute and give them the pieces for success. So the first year I visited all my, in the first 3 months, I visited all my posts. I saw a lot of great things, but what I noticed was we had 19 posts. We had 19 little islands that didn't talk with each other.
Yeah.
Attendance at the district meeting was sporadic. It was the only folks who were there were the folks who had to be there. And even then, sometimes they would find, reasons not to be there. But as we started working with each other, as we started sharing those successes within the district amongst the posts, guess what? Success begets success. We started seeing that while I cracked the egg, while I cracked the code on something and made it better here, the true level of success is sharing with others and letting them apply it. So I took that and so now what we did after the first year of me being a district commander, instead of having 19 little islands, I had 19 islands with 18 bridges. So everybody was talking with each other and everybody was willing to share not only the things that they did well, but also those things that didn't go so well. So nobody else had to waste time doing those things.
Yeah, for sure. Lessons learned. Important.
As we started doing that, I saw that as a great way to build a district as a team. What I want to see is how can we build how can we now build those bridges among the districts so that we can build a unified team at the state level? So I've been to about half of the district so far, and I've seen some great ideas. I've seen some great policies and processes and techniques in these other districts. And I've told them up front, I've been honest and upfront. I said, look, I'm going to steal these things shamelessly. So brought those back to my district. And again, a lot of great ideas from people who have seen things from different perspectives than I have. And the other thing is that I don't want to just steal them for myself. I want to share them with all the other district commanders so that we can all build and we can all learn from each other and all have a collective greatness. Although I'm not a Navy guy, I did have 500 sailors working underneath me when I was in Camp Buca in 2008. And one of the great sayings I learned from them and I stole from them was, on a high tide, ships rise. If we could all learn from each other, we can all get better together.
Yeah, for sure. You're right. Rising, and I've heard it, a different way. Rising tides raises all boats. So it's, we're all raising together. Well, you know, you are, a candidate for the high office of state junior vice commander. And, as you've been traveling, you shared a little bit with us just a moment ago, a little bit about what you're seeing around the districts. And what people are doing. I think that's a wonderful idea, especially if we can come together and share ideas, right? Especially, you know, as district commanders, you and I come together five times a year, right? In the Council of Administration to basically help run the organization between conventions. So that's a great, that's a great point. You know, as you've traveled the state, you've seen things that we can share together to make the organization better, especially failures, right? Share those failures because we don't want to have the pain of others going through this if they don't have to, right? So you are a candidate for the high office of junior vice commander for the Department of Pennsylvania. And I'm sure you've seen things that work well and things that if you just shared, things that maybe we can improve upon. You and I, as district commanders, come together five times a year at the Council of Administration to share. These would be a great place, I think, you know, to share ideas of this nature. Tell us a little bit about your observations, especially as a, you know, second year district commander on areas that if you were to be elected commander of the Department of Pennsylvania, some areas you would focus on.
I appreciate it. Great question. So, yeah, what I've seen is, again, I've stepped back, I've observed, I've seen how the normal state of affairs appears to be within the state. And, you know, there's a lot of great people doing a lot of great things. But I think with the greatest challenge that is presented to the state right now is that we have hit a state of inertia in the state. The leaders aren't being elected. The last state convention that we went to, every elected office had one candidate. The state junior vice candidate last year ran unopposed. You can't run a democratic environment. You can't have an organization that embraces the Constitution and democracy and only have one candidate. So again, we need to present the voting, the public, the people options. We need to present the people reasons why they should vote for one person versus another. Because past leadership has endorsed them does not mean that they're a viable candidate. The endorsement of past leadership, while it's impressive, all that tells us is that the that whoever they endorsed will perpetuate the examples and the protocols that happened in the past. And let's be honest, this organization is a great organization. It's been around for over 100 years. By the way, a little piece of trivia, you know, we've been around since the late 1899. We merged all three of the different VFW factions together in 1914 in a convention in Pittsburgh. So
I didn't know
VFW
that.
Has roots in Pennsylvania.
Oh, sure.
You know, according to the Census Bureau, there were over 600,000 veterans just in the state of Pennsylvania. Right now, we have 60,000 members in the VFW. We have 60,000 members. We have 60,000 paid members in the VFW. Yet we only had 600 at our state convention. So while we as the military represent the 1% of the U.S. population that have served, unfortunately, at our state convention where our voices are heard, only 1% of our membership is there. So we need to make sure that the choices that we make set us up for success for the future.
Yeah,
one of the things I've seen here is that we have perpetuated a status quo in this organization. Because we've always done it this way doesn't mean it's the way that we need to move forward. Okay. Right. How many of us still have a VCR that blinks 12 o'clock? We don't. Just because we do things a certain way doesn't mean it's the best way moving in the future. So
sure.
What I like to do is I like to try to offer a different perspective, a different approach, because the current approach that we have has this organization in a slow decline to an eventual death. And I want the legacy of our veterans to perpetuate. I don't want it to pass and for us to be forgotten after this generation. We need to have change, and I'd like to be the instrument to invoke that change with this organization.
Well, those are great points, Ken. And, you know, 22, 23, 25 years ago, the Department of Pennsylvania had roughly, I wasn't involved in the organization back then, but they roughly had, you know, over 150, 160,000 members. And now the organization is down to roughly about 60,000, losing anywhere between 3,000 to 5,000 members a year. And it's unfortunate, right? Why, let's go back to the one person kind of candidacy of being elected. Why do you think that? Why do you think that? Because me personally, I think that the more people that are interested in running for the leadership roles is healthy. It shows interest. It shows enthusiasm. It shows investment in the organization. And yet you don't see as many people, you know, beyond one, right? Getting interested in becoming or running for those spots in leadership. What do you think is the underlying reason? Where, again, maybe it is somebody that is vetted by a small subset of prior leaders for, you know, same ideals, same mindset, things like that. Maybe that's it. Or like you've mentioned, or do you think that there's something else?
I think it's a great question. To be honest with you, I think it's a lack of awareness. It's a lack of awareness of the state with what is going on where the rubber meets the road at our local posts. The state leadership and the state organization is arm's length, double arm's length removed from what's actually happening in our posts. And at the same time, the posts our posts are bread and butter, our lifeblood of this organization. They're struggling. They're struggling to keep themselves afloat. They're struggling to maintain what they have, the real property that they have, the membership that they have. And to be honest with you, one of the things we did in my district was what I noticed was it was only officers that were showing up at the district meetings. So my second meeting, I asked why. And they said, well, only officers need to be showing up. And I'm like, no. This is an open and a public organization. We are open to all our constituents. We're open to all members. Anybody at any post can come to a district meeting. And they didn't know that. So
really?
If that division is there, if that lack of awareness is there from post to district, take it one step further to state. our members at our post aren't even aware of the fact that these events happening at state. So what's happening is you have a microcosm. You have a small population of folks who, and you know, we've been to the conventions, we've been to the midwinter conferences. It's the same people. Very, very rarely do you see anybody new, because they don't. It's almost Marie Antoinette-ish. It's them. It's state and it's post. And you know, they tolerate us at district because we're the bridge between them.
Yeah.
So I think it's a lack of awareness. It's a lack of understanding of the state folks actually understanding the trials and tribulations of what's going on in the post outside of their own individual posts that they go to. But also it's the fact that we really haven't publicized and we really haven't marketed the fact of, you know what, post members, you can come up to these districts, you can come up to these state meetings and you can learn what's going on behind the scenes. I'll be honest with you, as a district commander, I have very little visibility and very little has been shared with me, or no one has gone out of their way to show me what happens at the national level. So we should, as commanders, as leaders in the military, we always learn, you always mentor and you always train two levels down. We're not doing
that's
that.
A good point.
Yeah, that's a good point, because when you show up to conventions, you meet a lot of people, you learn a lot, but that level up, you don't, unless you go to a national convention like I do, whether you're given an appointment to go there or you show up. I can remember my first two national conventions. I invested my own money to show up. I was a delegate for my post. Of course, I didn't know what that meant, but it also, I knew it meant that I could vote at the national convention. So I wanted to invest my own money and my own time in going to see what was going on. And you're right. Unless you're actually physically there or in a group or something like that where they share that knowledge at that level, you normally don't get that, right? So I think that's a great opportunity for us to improve the communication overall, right?
There is a huge dearth of mentorship in this organization. And I could show the evidence about the fact of, take a look around at your post commanders. How many of them have been post commanders for 2, 3, 4, 5 years? Because no one else has, they haven't mentored their successor. At our level, at the district level, how many of our district commanders have been there for multiple years? Because nobody else wants the job. How many people up at the state level have been in their positions for multiple years? Because they haven't mentored a successor. And the thing is, to be honest with you, unless you have somebody reach down and talk with you and sponsor you and mentor you, you like you said, you went out to the national on your own dime, on your own volition. Mm-hmm. Unless there's not a lot of people that have that much incentive and that much desire, initiative to go out and things. There's a vast array of things that are out there, but the thing is, they're not being shared. And right now, to be honest with you, my personal belief is I don't know if it's an inability to mentor or an unwillingness to mentor. I was a successful company commander. I was a successful battalion commander. I was a successful brigade commander. I am a successful business owner, not because of what I do, but because of what I can teach and mentor and help my team so that collectively we all get together. We have multiple single points of failure at the state level. If one of those people, God forbid, goes away, moves out, moves on to other things, we're at their peril. There is no person in the on deck circle. So one of the things I really want to bring forward to this organization is the ability to build bench strength, to build depth, and to share the awareness and share the information. Knowledge is not power. That's a paradigm that died in the 1980s. We need to make sure that people can enjoy their life, that leaders can share. And the true test of a good leader is not what they do. It's what their people can do.
Yeah, a great point, because Leadership 101, leadership seminars that I've been into, the good leaders I've been around, the leadership literature and books and resource material that I've read, always says the first thing you do among the first things you do is look for a successor, and then look to mentor that successor into that role. Now, we see that word used in and around the VSOs, whether it's the American Legion, the VFW, the Disabled American Veterans, AMVETS, whatever it is. We see that word used, and it rolls off the tongue, but I don't believe there's a true understanding either from the people who are using it as part of their campaign speeches or a part of their using it in their role, whether a post commander, district commander, state commander. I don't believe that there's a true understanding of what mentorship really means. So I'm going to pose that question to you, Ken.
Mentorship. Again, you're absolutely right. A lot of folks will talk about mentorship. We'll talk about coaching and all that. We teach professional development. We teach executive coaching at Kingfisher, at my company. You cannot mentor others until you first understand yourself. You can't teach others to be a leader until you understand what it means to be a leader yourself.
Well, so it's interesting. It's interesting you say that, because I had a commander that said, as a young NCO, right? He said, you're going to be in a squad leader or team leader position. He says, however, he goes, you're going to work for another squad leader. You're going to work for a while for another team leader. He says, until I'm comfortable that you understand followership, he goes, I'm not going to allow you in my to influence those young troops that you're going to be leading. So when you understand followership, and I'm comfortable that you understand that concept, he says, I'll let you lead.
You have to be a good follower to be a good leader. You can't give the reason to your people to do this. The answer can't be because I said so.
Right.
So the hardest promotion that we had in the military. And I'm prior enlisted. I spent 30 years as an officer, but I was prior enlisted before I became an officer. I've got my
really
in fact,
okay.
I just got my retirement paper. Yep. So as the Navy calls him, I'm a Mustang. I went through all my retirement paperwork up at Toby Hanna Depot this past week to finally drop all my retirement papers. And I actually saw for the first time in God knows how long my enlistment contract from 1983.
Oh wow.
So yeah, you have to be able to understand what you're asking people to do. You have to walk a mile in their shoes. But to teach others, you have to understand what you're asking for them. And you also have to be, none of us know everything. Every day we're learning something, but you have to be solid in your leadership before you can teach others leadership. We have folks that think that because they're the leader, they're more important than everybody else.
Yeah.
The leader eats last. The leader gets the blame. The leader gives the credit. Again, it's about the command, not the commander. When we can be servant leaders and take care of our people, because you know what? 240,000 people can do a lot more than me, myself. When they want to follow you, they'll not only meet your standards, but they'll exceed your standards. But we have to give respect to get respect. And the challenge that I see is some of the folks that we have here have never been leaders, either military or commercial or corporate. Yeah. And it shows. We need to put people in leadership roles who are able to lead. The hardest promotion we had in the military was going from specialist to sergeant.
Yeah, without a doubt.
On Friday, you were a specialist and you were friends with everybody else. On Monday, you were a sergeant and you were now in charge of everybody else. How many of us, when we went through that transition, how many folks had friends trying to take advantage of you being a leader?
Oh yeah.
You can't give special treatment. You can't give favoritism when you're in charge. You when you're a leader, you're in charge of everybody. You're held to a higher standard. Somebody sees everything, and you've got to follow the process.
Without a doubt, I know that was a difficult transition for myself, as had many friends. You also at that point, you know who will stick by you. and we'll celebrate your success as you as you're promoted, and those that will go their own way. And you and I talked off camera.
If you're asking for favors, I'm sorry to interrupt.
John. No, go ahead.
The one last thought on it. If you have people who are, when you're in charge and you have people who are asking for favors because you're in charge, that because you're their friend, they're not your friend.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. And as I said, as leaders, we celebrate success. And I've seen that a lot in the organization as well. There's folks who will celebrate your success because they understand, they believe what you're doing, not because of tradition or like mindset, because they see something in you, or they see that you see something differently in the organization that will make the organization better. And that's those are the people I like to surround myself around, stuff like that. And I know you and I talked off camera a bit about.
Let me take one more step on mentorship, if I could.
Sure.
One more step on mentorship. So mentorship is not bringing mentorship is again being confident in your abilities, but also understanding that you have limitations as a leader as well. Mentorship, effective and successful mentorship, isn't making somebody a carbon copy of you. Effective mentorship is understanding what motivates somebody, identifying that potential in somebody, and the true measure of success for a mentor and a leader is for their people to do better than that leader did. We all want our kids to do better than we have.
Yeah,
it should be the same way with the people that we mentor. I have a number of folks who were junior to me as I was coming up through the ranks. When I was a brigade commander, I had a number of battalion commanders. I'm very, very proud of the fact that a number of those battalion commanders are now 1-2-star generals. They succeeded far beyond what I did. And I'm not jealous. I'm happy for them. I'm overly happy for them because I know that they did what they like to do. They did what they love to do, and they realized their potential.
And you were part of that journey.
Again, it's part of the journey. And sometimes what you see with leaders is they never want their people to be better than them. And I think that's one of the things that's holding us back here.
Yeah, that's a good point. Is that the you know, it goes back to what you said. If the leaders haven't been trained, if they were decent followers, if they haven't had the exposure to be leaders and understand what the leadership means, you're right. Leadership. I have coworkers that have trouble understanding that concept that say, you know, if I'm the leader, I'm the boss. You have to do what I say. Well, that's true. But there's a point where you get to, in my opinion, very quickly, a point of diminishing returns, where people are then looking to do things that are counterculture or counter mission to what you think your, you know, the vision is, or what you think your success you're having is as a leader.
Well, I think historically in this organization, what we've done is the concept of mentorship in this organization has been to teach the person to be a me in the follow-on years, to be make a copy of me to be the follow-on years. First off, you should never have just one mentor. You should have multiple mentors because, again, everybody is smarter than everybody else about something. Learn the best that we can from multiple different sources. The challenge I think that we've had here in this organization is we've tried to mentor. The concept of mentorship here is to bring somebody up to be me in the subsequent year.
Yeah.
So let me put it that a different way, to make a copy. So we've all done copies on the old Xerox machines in the past. When you make a copy of an original, it's pretty close. But what happens after you make a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy?
Yeah.
It becomes fuzzier. It becomes the resolution and the accuracy becomes diminished. And what we've done here is rather than trying to raise the bar, we tried to copy the bar, which is why it always confuses me. It always perplexes me because at the state conventions, the candidates never speak. Those past department commanders speak as endorsers, and they tell you to vote for this person because listen here. I live in a democracy. Actually, I live in a constitutional republic, but I vote for who I want to vote for. I don't vote for somebody because somebody else told me to vote for. Because in my mind, if somebody, the way this organization is, if somebody's endorsing a candidate, they're saying that they're going to do things just like they did. I don't want them to, even if they did a great job as a past department commander, I don't want the new guy to be as good as him. We need to constantly improve. I want the new candidate to do things better.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, because you don't really, a lot of times, I mean, if you're around the state level and you've been around the organization, you know the candidate or candidates in this case, right? Whether this year, you know, two different candidates. You get to know them, or you know them either for personal relationship, or you've been around them through the state events and the state organization, you know, throughout the year. I think it's a great idea to have those candidates speak, and go to the districts. I know that you've visited a number of districts. You'll be at my district here, you know, in February as well. And as you've traveled around the state, you and I talked about, you've really narrowed it down to really four key concepts that, you know, that I think you're focused on for your year. Let's go through those and, you know, one by one, and give us an idea of who Ken is as a leader and as a problem solver, and what areas those would be that you'd focus on.
Again, historically, what candidates have given is they've given you their three verbs and their idea, their motto of moving forward. Again, that's a technique. It's a good technique for some folks if they can embrace it, if they understand it, and if they're sincere about it. What I would like to do, and again, I'm running for an office, not, and my platform is not because of who I know or who knows me. And historically, elections in this organization have been because of associations. These people endorse this person. These people endorse that person. Again, we can't continue. We have been in decline for over 10 years. We can't continue to do these things. So rather than giving out the pithy little verbs of three little verbs of what we're going to do, what I've looked at is how are we going to, I'm not a complainer. I'm a problem solver, which is what a leader needs to be. And I'm looking at four key steps to get us to rediscover ourselves, reset ourselves, and refocus ourselves so that we are established for the future. My four key steps are, I mentioned a little bit earlier, awareness. State needs to be aware of the trials and tribulations at the post level. Despite what some folks at state believe, where the rubber meets the road, where the center of gravity is for this organization, is in our posts. If our posts die, we die. So we need to be aware of what's going on at the posts. At the same time, the posts need to be aware of what the decisions are at the state. So number one is awareness. Number two is engagement. It's while it's good to know what's going on, and again, you need to know the problem before you can put the solution in place. Number two is engagement. Don't just say I'm aware of it and do nothing about it. Now that we understand what's going on and what the issues are, how are we going to fix it? Put action verbs in place. Don't discuss it. Don't talk about it. Let's put action verbs in place and do things to fix the shortcomings that we have. So one is awareness. Two is engagement. Three, and again, we talked about leadership, and we talked about everybody having different points of perspective. Not one person is going to have the right answer. Many, many times, the right answer is from multiple perspectives. So one is awareness, understanding what the problem is. Two is engagement. Three is collaboration, working together, understanding the different perspectives, understanding the second and third order effects of decisions that we make. Because again, words have meaning. We want to collaborate, get the best solution for everyone. Unlike current politics, where everything is very black and white, it's either all this or all that, the best solution are the solutions that involve everybody, and we have a win-win situation. So again, one is awareness, two is engagement, three is collaboration to get to that solution. Now, once we get to that solution, it's not a one and done. So the fourth step of this is sustainment. We've cracked the code. We've figured out what the right thing is. How do we make sure that it doesn't go away in 6 months? We want to make sure that if we improve something, it stays improved. And not only that, but once we've cracked the code here, the big secret is how can we get this recipe for success and spread it throughout the rest of the state for all the other organizations? We did a lot of hard work to get this solution here. This group of people over here doesn't need to do all that hard work. It's a ready-made answer. It's an off-the-shelf solution. Let's share it. And if it could work someplace else, guess what? We just cut our costs in half.
It's a good
awareness, engagement, collaboration, and sustainment.
That's great. And if you permit me just a moment, I want to focus on that last one, sustainment, because that's I've heard these today, for the very first time. So they're resonating with me. But the last one particularly, I'm going to ask you to expand on a little bit, because when you talk about sustainment, let's say the first three go off in your command year just flawlessly, right? You hit all those points. The machine is running. It's great. You get to sustainment. You leave office. You as the commander leave office. And what happens is, because the terms are only 1 year, the next commander behind you may or may not have shared your ideals, your ideas, your solutions, shared the process and everything that was built during that year to be sustained is maybe not even by purposefully dismantled. Maybe it's just they're doing something else and it just the wheels fall off the bus because no one maintained the tires.
Yep. No, great point. So if anybody's ever deployed to Korea, again, Korean deployments for the Army are typically 1 year. And there's a running joke that, we work Korea operations 1 year at a time. You make a great point. So, if this all happens 1 year and all of a sudden what happens in the next year? And that's where we go back to mentorship. The command team is your commander, your senior vice, and your junior vice. And as we go through those chairs, that commander this year should be mentoring the senior and the junior vice. They should be working together and collaborating so that when that commander steps aside and the senior becomes the commander, the junior becomes the senior, there's a train of consistency. There's a train of continuity there. We've all seen in the government sector, oh, well, there's a new commander in place. Oh, well, we'll just wait 2 years. We'll wait them out and we'll take it back to the way it was. Well, we don't want that to happen. It doesn't do the organization any good to do that. So the senior, the commander, needs to be listening to the senior and junior vices in order to help guide them to perpetuate and to continue his or her initiatives. But also at the same time, the junior and the senior vice need to be listening to that commander, not because they have to, but because they want to make sure that anything that they want to accomplish, they can piggyback on the accomplishments and successes of their predecessors.
Yeah, it's a great
point. These are not 1 year, or 1 year exclusive events. We need to have a continuity across these. And unfortunately, the continuity that we've had across these up until this time has been status quo. We've always done it this way. And here we go. We're going to go with cutting edge 1970s technology.
Absolutely. I mean, I work in technology and we have a concept called continuous improvement, continuous delivery, that iterative process where we're making things better, building to your point on the accomplishments of true accomplishments of either our predecessor or past practices. I'd like to switch topics if I could with you, because it's the topic that always comes up with candidates for department offices. It's membership, and everybody has their own either their own interpretation or understanding of membership. Me being the membership, the department chair for 2 years plus of membership, focused a lot on getting new veterans into the organization, especially younger veterans that want to get them excited. So we'll talk about the generation gap we have in getting new younger members excited. But I know you have your own views on membership, and it may not focus on new membership, but the retention of membership.
Yes, sir. So appreciate it. Yeah. So membership is important. Again, we have 60,000 members in this organization currently. We had 600 at the state convention. I've been to half of the district meetings right now. I've seen attendance at district meetings. I've been to about half the districts so far. I've seen attendance at district meetings go anywhere from a low of 8 and not a quorum able to be held to low 40s. So you have districts who have hundreds of people with only tens or dozens or a handful of people showing up. So membership, and again, John, you did fantastic work as in the membership committee, but that's only half the battle. Bringing them in is only half the battle. When we bring them in, that gets us another name on the rolls. It makes our organization look bigger, and it gets $30 to state and national for dues. But what does that name do for a post? And there's a challenge that I see. I see that while we're increasing and not only that, but if you make your membership numbers for this year, guess what happens to next year's goal? Whatever you've accomplished this year now becomes a standard for next year. So there's no respite. Right. So we're in my perception, from my position, we're artificially inflating the numbers that we have. Action Corps, we have 60,000 members. Action Corps right now boasts about 14,000 participants right now. So even among the 60,000, and again, that's open to everyone. That's open to everyone, not members, but also our association.
Yeah. Anybody over 18. Yeah.
But even with the heavy marketing we've done with Action Corps, we've only been able to get at most 20 to 25% participation there. So there's 75% untapped. When you're a post or district commander and you're seeing all these names, you never see these people. They're names on your rosters, but guess what? You have the same post commander for 4 or 5 years. You have the same 6 or 7 people at meetings. You don't see these people. We don't have a sponsorship program. If we have a new member, one of us old venerable veterans should take these new members and reach out to them and say, hey, come on over. You know, it's not just the bar. It's not just this. It's not just that. Let me show you the things that we're doing. One thing that I would like to try to put in place once we start moving forward, if I'm granted the blessing of command of junior vice, is to put in a sponsorship program so we can bring these younger vets in place. According to U.S. News, the tide has turned in the last 2 years. There are now more GWAT vets, Global War and Terrorism vets, than there are Vietnam vets.
Yeah.
It's an untapped resource that we don't have. Now, we may be getting their names on the rolls, but they're not coming to our meetings and they're not engaged. The only thing that they're giving us is their dues money. Membership is important, but I think what's more important than membership is utilization, is bringing people into the fold, is bringing that next generation in, learning what we're doing, and you know, understanding what we're doing, and carrying it forward. We need fresh legs, and that is what we have been lacking in this organization. And unfortunately, many of the folks who have been around here for a while, my perception is that they are reluctant to give up those reins. So we need again. A leader is not marked on what he accomplishes. A leader is defined on what his people accomplish. We need to find these folks. And what I've done in my district is I've told my people, it's like, look, yes, we should look at membership, and when given the opportunity, let's bring new people in. But what's more important to me, I'd much rather have 2 or 3 current members who have not participated in the past to come forward and help us, then to give me 3 more names on the membership list. Yeah. All those names don't do any good for me to help me perpetuate and help that post succeed.
Correct. And we talked about sustainability. You're going to need those folks. If something, you know, God forbid something happens to you or anybody else who is in those roles, how many times just in our own districts, you know, just in our own districts, have we had to replace somebody who has been ill or unfortunately passed away? Or even, to tell you the truth, even in my own district, doing post inspections where you find ineligible members. that are not eligible for the VFW and had to be removed, right? I had to remove a post commander.
And remember, we're a volunteer organization. People, and God bless the members who do participate, and God bless the members for everything that they've done, because we do it out of the goodness of our heart. We're not under contract. We're not under an enlistment. We're not on a salary. These people are doing it out of the goodness of their heart. And what boggles my mind is that we have some leaders out there that make demands on lower headquarters, or demands on other people, like they're paying them.
Yeah.
We're all volunteers. We've got to embrace the fact that we're here out of the goodness of our heart, and we're out of the goodness of charity, and we're here because we want the organization to do better, not because we're cashing a paycheck, and not because we're under obligation.
So, Ken, as you've traveled the state, have you noticed any emerging themes that you hear when you talk with post and district commanders and just members in general throughout the state of Pennsylvania?
Yep. Great question. So again, I visited about a half of the districts so far. I'm planning on visiting as many of the districts I can before the state convention next June. Oh, by the way, for those out in the listening audience, again, state convention is open to all VFW members. You don't have to be a post officer, a district officer. Anybody can go to these things. And I really think it's a great learning environment, a great civics lesson to see how democracy should work. But as I go out to the district meetings, and as I'm talking with the post, I've seen a lot of fantastic things. I can't tell you how impressed I am with the efforts and all the support that people have for their posts and trying to take care of things in their community. But you know, after I have my speech or my discussion at the good of the order at the end of the district meeting, I sit back and I wait for people, and a lot of people have approached me. And what I've seen, a common recurring theme I've seen in multiple districts, more than not, almost all, is that the common theme that I see is that when I talk with people, they come up to me afterwards. And they say to me, I stick around afterwards. I listen to the folks, and I want to support the post as best I can. In fact, one of the things that I always do is whenever I visit a post, any post, not just now, but anytime I ever go to a VFW post, I want to support the post the best I can. I always buy the post shirt. I always buy whatever they can to try to put some money back into that post. And I'm a proud owner. I have over 75 post shirts right now.
That's cool.
But I sit around after the meeting and people come up to me, and some young, some old, varying degrees of vets, and the grounds. I continue to see a groundswell of discontent of the way things have been. I continue to see frustration, and now it borders on apathy because of the fact that we can't rely upon state to help the posts. The posts are struggling. The posts have been giving, giving, giving. This is almost like Robin Hood, and it seems like state is the sheriff of Nottingham. They keep taking from the posts, and the posts are running. There's no more blood to be gotten from the posts. They're giving to the state at their own peril. Our posts are starting to die off, but there's no relief. There's no succor coming from state. And people aren't going to take this anymore. It may not be today. It may not be tomorrow. But if we continue to march down this path, there is going to be a mass exodus of this organization because people are tired of the way things have been done. This cannot continue.
Yeah, that's a good point. You hear that, especially over the past, over the pandemic, right? We lost a few posts, right? We lost quite a few posts during the pandemic.
We're continuing to lose posts.
Yeah.
We are at our last council of administration. I lost count after 18 of how many posts are having challenges or simply just leadership walking away because they've had enough. But there's no response. There's no response from state. Not that I've seen. I have not seen any response from state on how to counter this. We are bleeding our posts dry, and we're not looking for other sources of income out there. We can do private public partnerships. We can do community corporate collaboration. While we raise $5,000 on a meal or an event or a walk, that's fantastic. We can go to U.S. Steel, we can go to Hershey, we can go to PNC. They get tax deductions for donating to nonprofits. We can get $10,000 a lot easier from a corporation than we can by requiring our membership to reach in their back pocket. In my district, we've gotten donations from the local casino for $10,000 to go to one of our posts to improve things for local veterans in our communities to make things better. My post received a donation of $25,000 from the local mill because they saw the great things we were doing for local veterans. We don't have to continue to bleed our people dry. Let's look for alternate sources of funding.
That's great. That's a great. And you know, something I was going to, as we take our final 30 seconds here to wrap up the show. If you were to look at that post commander, that post delegate, the people who are voting at the state convention for the two candidates, what's your pitch to them, Ken, that says you're the person that should get the nod to be the commander of the state?
I appreciate it. So I think we can all agree that the path that we're going is unsustainable. If you're happy with the way things are right now, if you're happy with the way your post is operating, if you're happy with the support that you're getting from state, vote for the other guy. If you're not and you want change, vote for me. My center of gravity is the posts. My center of gravity is our local veterans. Our motto is no one does more for veterans. I want to do more for veterans in our communities. Our post commanders, God bless them, they work in their post communities. They work in their communities. They help their locals. They know who the veterans are. I want to help them. I don't want to send a check with a memo in it to state and go to national. And you know what? Maybe we'll see something. Legislation is important. Don't get me wrong. We're a nonpartisan public, political action group. I understand that. But political action takes a long time. We've got veterans on the street right now that are homeless, that are missing meals, and we need to help them before we do anything in Washington. My focus is on the streets and corners of our communities at our posts. My opponent's center of gravity is Washington, D.C. There's homeless vets in Washington, D.C. Let the Washington, D.C. post help them. I want to help the vets in our communities, and I want to help you help your vets, help our vets in our communities.
Well, Ken, I appreciate that perspective. Thank you for that perspective. Ladies and gentlemen, Kenneth King, District 27 Commander of the Veterans of Foreign Wars and Department of Pennsylvania, and also a candidate for the high office of State Junior Vice Commander. He's a colleague in the Council of Administration with me and a fellow district commander. Ken, thank you for your time today and being on the show, and good luck with you and your campaign, and we'll see you at the midwinter.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. God bless you all. Okay. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.